Hey everybody, it's Ernesto from Social Work Mentor. It's been a little while since I've put up a new podcast here, but this one is an especially good one that you're going to be enjoying today with Ms. Barbara Watkins, who is a recently retired social worker who has an extensive experience with developing school social work programs at the university level. Before we get into it though, I just want to remind you to visit Social Work Mentor for a lot of different social work related tools, guidance and assistance. And also, if you want to see Social Work Mentor in all of the different areas where we exist, just go to socialworkmentor.com/links and you'll be able to see our social media and some of the courses and tools and other things that we offer. So before we go any further, I want to thank Ms. Barbara Watkins for being a guest on an interview that we did just before we had to shelter in place for COVID-19. And so that's what you'll hear following this announcement. So I hope you enjoy the episode. There's a lot of gems in there that you'll get about social work in general, and specifically about building a social work, school of social work, and social work agency partnership, as well as planning for retirement and making sure as social workers we set things up right for those post-social work years. So enjoy the episode and thanks for listening.
Okay, everybody, welcome to episode 2 of the Case Notes from the Field Social Work Podcast. This week, we have another super awesome guest that I've known for a while now through our work at a local child welfare social services agency. And so we have today with us Ms. Barbara Watkins. She's a recent retiree. From child welfare, she brings with her a wealth of experience in just social work in general, but also students, BSW and MSW students, and the relationships between the university and a social services agency, which hopefully we'll talk about. And also, she's, as I mentioned, a recent retiree, so just hopefully she can give some of us some good advice about how to start thinking about retirement and just life after social work. So welcome, Barbara. Thank you for agreeing to do this in episode number 2.
So yes, I am a native Californian and I'm very proud of that because there's not very many of us left. I was born in Monterey and I pretty much grew up on the Monterey Peninsula, Cedar Grove, until I left in 1980 for school. I came to San Jose because I wanted to pursue my degree in social work. And it was the closest college that had a degree in social work. I wasn't quite ready to leave home, but so San Jose was close. And so after getting my bachelor's degree in social work, I stayed on to get my master's degree in social work also at San Jose State School of Social Work. And I, at the time, which was in the early-ish 80s, everybody kind of wanted to be a general, sort of like a practitioner, like do direct practice. That's all I really knew about, either that or community organizing. And I was sort of like, I hadn't discovered my activism yet, so community organizing wasn't quite, what I thought I wanted to do. Yeah. Now, in hindsight, it's probably
now. A lot of us early on are kind of blind,
right?
Just going through the motions, trying to figure it out.
Yeah. So I went into working in a children's day treatment center for about a year, and then somebody told me about case management. And I went, what? Case management? That sounds like something I want to do for county child welfare. So I started at county child welfare in 1985, and I stayed there until December of 2018. So it was a 33-year career.
Wow.
And along with that, I also started working at San Jose State University as faculty. I started there in 1995. I was teaching an undergraduate program for about 6 years. And somebody pulled me aside one day and said, do you know about this faculty field liaison gig? I'm like, no, what's that? Like, well, you work with students in the field. And I thought, what? So in 2001, I became a faculty field liaison and remained there actually to this day, still doing that. As part-time. It was always part-time. But I started doing both for a very long time.
Yeah, and that's, The time that I've known you, that's the role that you've been in. And when at your retirement, I don't know that I didn't remember that you had told me you were still even going to be doing it. So it just kind of speaks a little bit to, like, sometimes you get into those roles that even though it's time to leave, it's not, you know, it's still with you and you still have something to give and something to do. So thanks for sharing all that, just to give us a little background on who you are and what you're all about. Why did you choose social work? Was there any a family member or a friend or a mentor? Like, what was it that kind of honed you in? Again, you spoke a little bit. Anything more about what really got you to go down the social work path?
Probably two things. Back when I started school, undergrad, it was 1980. But back then, I was really interested in...
You don't have to give years anymore.
Okay. Back then, I was really big into investigation. And this was like before CSI and all that. Uh-huh. Had I known about CSI, I probably would have become like a forensic investigator. Right. I thought, what can I do where there's some kind of investigation where you get to ask people questions and get paid for it, right? Mm-hmm. So somewhere along the line, I found out about social
work. Where do you think that even came from? Do you have any idea?
Like, I think because I'm naturally curious, and I like asking questions and engaging people in that way.
And that's true about you, I know that.
and then the other thing I think that struck me was, I don't remember exactly when, but I think I was in junior high school. My father had a stroke. And we interacted with a social worker for the very first time in my life. And I remember how supportive she was and trying to connect us with resources. And I was just really impressed with her job. I'm like, wow, people do this, you know? So then I reflected on that when I was thinking about, well, I like investigation. Okay, maybe I could be a social worker because they get to ask people questions and they get to support people. And there's a college 75 miles away from home that has a degree. So I kind of fell into it that way. And then once I got into it, it sort of got me.
Opened up.
Yeah.
So interesting just how, a lot of people, at least for me, when I've asked people sometimes, why did you choose social work? Some people often tell me, I didn't choose it, it chose me. And it's kind of like the serendipity sometimes of how just events in life or or your upbringing or whatever, like it comes together in a way that brings you to social work. And it's interesting just the way your natural, proclivities came together with life events and took you that path. I'm glad I asked that question. I didn't know that about you. Okay. You've seen, a lot. I've been around not that long, but 20 plus years. And I know those of us who have been around for a little bit, we've seen kind of some of the ups and downs of the profession overall, maybe a bureaucracy or a large organization. So from your perspective and the things that you've done and the time that you've been around, are there any kind of like or what is it that kept you in the field with all the kind of things that change, ever always changing? What kept you with social work?
Well, I think the first 4 years I was at County, I was working on the line as a case caring social worker in a very challenging unit. It was a severe and chronic sexual abuse unit. Mm-hmm. It was a hard place to start as a brand new social worker in child welfare, there it was, and it was the first time in my life, certainly my professional life, but really in my life that I was dealing with the severity of child abuse, in particular sexual abuse, not having any idea.
That reality, when you get there, slaps you in the face.
It does. But then I saw what, I think I really understood what my role was, which was to protect children. And so it's like, okay, how do I balance protecting children with the actions that are happening to them by people that love them, their parents? It was a challenge, but a really supportive environment at work, supervisor. And I think what I've always done professionally is have a really full personal life. Mm-hmm. And so I always had this balance, right? Mm-hmm. And so that kept me going. And then I think finding the right fit. And once I found social work education and working with interns, I was in. Because then I had the opportunity to create and support other social workers in doing the work and learning the work. Way more than I could have ever done as as one social worker. Mm-hmm. So once I got into that position and started working with social interns, it was the best fit ever.
I'm so glad you said that for two reasons, to see if I remember them. Number one, I think that a lot of times social workers, especially in child welfare, but across the gamut of the social work profession, you know, you get in first year, maybe you got some energy, second year, the reality hits you. When the third year rolls around, you're starting to sometimes question. I see a lot of people, especially, you know, I think there is some truth to the younger generation is much more kind of fluid in their thoughts about their career.
Sure.
And so I think the message that, one of the messages I hear from you in that is that maybe the role that you're in at that time isn't the role. It doesn't mean that social work is not for you, but maybe you still have some career exploration within the field. And so that's encouraging to know that, and for those that are second guessing their career choice, that there may still be opportunity within social work. And I've moved around a decent amount too, and I have found that for some people, they're one unit, one work job for 30 years.
Right.
And for some of us, we have a passion for the work, but not necessarily always the exact job. So that was one thing. And then I knew I would forget the second thing.
Okay.
If I remember it, I'll bring it back up. But
to that point, though, one of the questions I get asked by prospective social work students, because they're sometimes wanting to decide between an MFT, a Master's mm-hmm. in Family Therapy versus MSW, Master's in Social Work, and they're like, well, what's the difference? And I, obviously I have a bias, but what we gain with the MSW is that ability to take our skills and apply them in so many different settings. And so you can just stay in the same agency and move around and try different things, or try different populations, different issue areas, and you still have this foundation that takes you anywhere. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, and that you actually made me remember what I was going to say. So I think also another thing that I hear sometimes is that people, it's more from the outside sometimes, but people think that if you're not doing direct service, doing therapy, or you're not doing case management, you're not doing social work, or that's not. But I think when you're talking about the impact that you're able to have in your career through the work with the university and that kind of mentorship role, who knows how many lives you touched and will continue to touch much beyond, your 33 years. By doing something that some people would say, oh, that's not social work, you're not doing social work, but just the impact of that.
Right.
That was the thing that I was, the reason I was glad you mentioned that. The work with the university, and we're talking about San Jose State University in particular in this case, but is there anything, insight you could give us about just that partnership? Because the program itself, in many ways, or to a large extent, you developed what that program looks like now. So in that process, what kind of insights did you get into, partnering with the university or the development of students or just those types of things?
Mm-hmm. I think early on, what I did is after I case carried, I started, I wasn't at the time running the intern program because there were other people involved, but eventually I got that role to actually run the program and manage the program. But I think what happened is when I started, there was really nobody else doing what I was doing. I mean, I was a social work supervisor, but I was really running a program, and it was a very large program. Mm-hmm. And other counties had a few students here, a few students there. But then I think what changed things in the Bay Area is when the Title 4E project came on board, which is where we provide stipends to students learning about child welfare, and they have special curriculum at school, and then when they graduate, they are required to work in child welfare, and then their loan is forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once that kind of came on board and it grew in the Bay Area, we developed, at my suggestion, we developed sort of a collaborative between the agency people, such as myself, the intern coordinators, and what the university community calls us intern coordinators, and then faculty from the schools of social work, and we all started meeting together Because what we were trying to define is, what does it look like? What's it look like for universities and agencies to work together? Universities didn't speak our language. They didn't understand child welfare. They didn't understand the kind of students that we needed to have and what the students were going to be up against. Because it's a niche. I mean, it's very specialized. And so we started the dialogue, right? And so the universities learned what it was like for their students to be in child welfare. Mm-hmm. And then we were learning about curriculum and what they were learning in schools and saying, you know what? You need to make some changes. They need to understand more about substance abuse. You know, they need to understand more about, you know, intimate partner violence. They need to, you know, mm-hmm. because they didn't understand the issues that our clients are facing.
The academic, theoretical.
Exactly. So that opened up this great partnership of getting our students the education that they need, education and support, and us providing this great training ground for them. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I think I noticed, is that we just weren't speaking the same language. Mm-hmm. You know?
And that, to me, that speaks so much back to your point about the NSW and the foundation that it provides us, and also to what I was saying about kind of like the impact that we can have, because, and then the thing about direct service, because so that clearly was not doing direct service with clients, mm-hmm. but a lot of the things that you talked about, like identifying a problem, identifying some solutions, collaborating, building a community of you know, these professionals, like all those are social work skills that you develop in an MSW program oftentimes. And and the impact is in the thousands of people that you have. And so that to me, really, that experience ties together some of these concepts. Do you think am I accurate on that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've never, when people ask what I do, I say social work, I'm a social worker. And then they say, well, what do you mean? You know, then I go, well, I'm really more on the social work education side. But, you know, I'm assessing fitness for the profession. Mm-hmm. So I'm always assessing students and their capabilities as I would with a client. You know, I'm helping them goal set, I'm helping them plan, you know, helping them get through barriers, you know, helping them access resources, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's really, it's a different kind of population. And I don't think of students as clients, but the social work skills that I have are super important. I mean, engagement. Mm-hmm. I have to go talk to universities. I have to go talk to students. You know, I had to about, you know, wanting them, you know, encouraging them to come to, you know, Santa Clara County for the internship. I had to really rely on my engagement skills for that, mm-hmm. you know. So it's things that I learned along the way, you know. Yeah. Or when I'm interviewing a student, how do I find out what they're about so that I can make a good match, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So that's all social work.
Yeah. So when you tell people that you're a social worker and you know, that we live in the Silicon Valley and there's engineers and all these kinds of people, and you tell people you're a social worker, sometimes many of you know that there's a particular response that people get. And I know even right now as we film this, there's a Netflix special that I haven't seen yet, but you know, paints a certain picture, is my understanding. Yeah. So when you tell people you're a social worker, or you were a social worker professionally or whatever, what do you get, any typical response to that? Do people have comments to make?
It's funny. She's like, oh.
Get that look.
And then, what? And it's either because they don't know really what it is, and they'll say, oh, so you help people get money? Mm-hmm. No, I'm not an eligibility worker. Mm-hmm. Said, in the old days, that was combined, but no, I was in child welfare. And then there's usually confusion, and then I explain, you know, what it is. You know, we are in the business of protecting children from child abuse and neglect. Then their eyes get big. And then they usually want to hear stories. They're like, oh, tell us, like, what happened, you know? And how come, you know, we don't know this, and how come we don't know that? And I talk about the level of confidentiality, you know, and that kind of thing. But once people have a sense of what it is, because they'll ask a little more about it, mm-hmm. then they're intrigued. Mm-hmm. What is this? And then they'll say, so you do that every day? And, well, no, actually, what I do, I train people to do that every day. And they're like, what? And so it's just interesting because, I think they want to know. It's kind of like not to be negative, but it's kind of like a car accident. You want to know what happened, but you don't want to look, you know, because child abuse is not very pleasant to talk about. But people want to hear the stories. That one family member, every time we got together, she's like, tell me a story. And even if it's not yours, one of your students' stories. I'm like, seriously? But it's just because it's it's foreign for a lot of people too.
And a lot of times, you know, obviously the work that we do is so impactful on so many people. But, you know, many times people work, sticks with people that aren't always those positive good outcomes. It's those bad ones. And so, and often, you know, we'll hear, a thing that I hear about is, oh, I called, you know, there was something going on my street or at the store and I called and nothing happens and you guys don't do anything. And people don't really understand that, you know, obviously we wouldn't expect the public to necessarily understand the process that goes into that. But every, as you said, you know, when you tell a story or give a little background, that's an opportunity to educate people a little bit more about what we do, how we do it, why we do it. So let's we'll move a little bit towards your current position or position in life. And so, you know, things in the past, we worked in the same agency, and so things, you know, it's been a kind of a eventful past few years, but you, that was your time of transition into retirement. So is there anything as you kind of now, what, like a year out? As you reflect on what that transition time was like, is there anything that really stands out? Like, you know, wow, I did this, or I should have done this, or any transition kind of?
Well, I think I started thinking about it, you know, because I had been there so long, people would start asking me, when are you going to retire? And I realized it wasn't because I looked old, it's because they wanted my job. You know, so I'm like, okay.
That you had grew up from.
So I'm like, I'm not leaving. You know, am I here too long? You know, so I started thinking about, okay, what do I want to do? But what I started doing was going to retirement workshops, probably at least 5 years before I retired, just to kind of know if I was on the right track financially, if there was something I needed to do differently, you know? So I just wanted to have that information. And then as I started thinking about it and thinking about it a little bit more, I went to every workshop you could imagine. And I had a retirement buddy, which is a great thing. If you can have a retirement buddy, that's like
that
the best. Because we would always go together. If I couldn't go, she would go, and then we share information. And just sharing that goal together was just wonderful. We had a wonderful time sharing that goal together. But I think that when I realized, okay, when am I going to do this? You know, because honestly, I love my job. I love my job, and I knew, okay, I don't can I see myself not doing it? But what I had was San Jose State. I knew that I was going to keep that part-time position as a faculty field liaison. And I always thought, I really want to have that job just as that job. Let that be my focus and not always have to be second, you know? Because I was always trying to fit everything in together. And I was doing I did a really good job of doing it. And some people didn't know I had two jobs. And I always compartmentalized very well. So I never tried, you know, overlap and stuff. And then I think I decided, it seems to get a little crazy at the department politically. And I also sought a reclassification because I realized, I don't know why it took me so long to realize, but I was running a program. I was not doing the work of a social work supervisor. And I saw other people around me getting reclassified as project managers. And I thought, So, and I got some advice from a former boss, and who had left, and I said, do you think it's something I should pursue? And she said, absolutely. So the process of going through that reclassification was not very positive, but at the end of the day, I got the reclassification to project manager, which was a better fit for what I was doing, my day-to-day work. But because the process was not very positive, it kind of left a sour taste in my mouth, and I thought, wow, I don't know. But I knew I needed to stay at least a year. And so I think, I'm not sure if it had gone differently, would I stay longer? Because I was really feeling like I love my job, but I'm kind of over the routine of getting up every morning, dealing with the challenges that come up. I knew how to deal with them, but I was getting tired of dealing with them. And I was feeling like I wasn't at a place where I really wanted to take the program to its next level. I just wasn't sure if I had that energy anymore because there were new people coming on board that probably would have that kind of energy and could have a different vision because I was so enmeshed with the program, honestly, mm-hmm. that sometimes it's hard to see outside of what you're doing, because I had developed this great program, and it was working.
And at some point, it kind of goes on autopilot, too.
Yes, exactly. So I just thought, you know, it's time. I got my reclassification. I've got family stay unlocked. I knew I was going to be able to do that. And in the 33 years, I thought, I think it's time. So then that last year was just a lot of planning. Mm-hmm. And what was important to me was to make sure everything was in order, because the program meant so much. I mean, it still means so much, but at the time, meant so much to me that I didn't want anybody, any students, to suffer because I was leaving, right? Mm-hmm. And because good, bad, and different, the program was associated with me. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, if you leave, what's going to happen in the program?
Yeah, that really was right? A problem for a lot of people.
So I had to make sure everything was in order. So mm-hmm. I spent most of that year really getting things in order, documenting things and mm-hmm. processes and things like that. And then the financial stuff and all that stuff, that was starting to happen. And mm-hmm. started working with an outside financial advisor just to, again, make sure we were on track. And so by the time I left, I had no regrets. Everything was in order. And that's mm-hmm. what the only regret I had no control over it, but there was nobody in the position when I left. Mm-hmm. But I had no control over that.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, but other than that, it was time. You just kind of have
nothing. And also, you said earlier, and we'll get to it a little bit more, but you also have your life outside of social work. And I know you have, you know, your interests. So it's not always like a push out, it seems.
Right.
It's a pull out. Like, there's exactly. things in life that you kind of, like, you're kind of over. Yeah. Out of 33 years in, you're kind of done, been there, done that. And there's other things you want to explore in life. And I think I know that about you. And so it's kind of that push pull that when it's in the right time, it's the right place. And the other thing I wanted to say too is, I don't know if it's in every organization, but in our organization, often people, you know, when people come and go and retire, it's almost like the bureaucracy and the system just plugs in another person and
right.
just keeps rolling.
Right.
But, you know, for some programs, and I think yours is one of them, or I'll say your program, is because you were an integral and are still an integral part of it. Like, that, I don't think your position, even though new people will come in and they'll do what they do, but like you said, it still will be tied to you, at least, you know, mm-hmm. for some time, because it's this, what you've done and the position, the program that you created is not one of those plug and play
right.
kinds of things that we often see. So I think that's a credit to just the dedication to the work that you did. Some of this, but what is one of the most impactful experiences that you ever had? For some people, you know, there's a lot of them always, but there's sometimes one or two like real things that hit home with us in our careers that just impact us at a different level even than the other stuff. So do you have any that you can think of?
Well, you know,
in 33 years?
I think it's more general than specific, mm-hmm. but every year, because I'm a faculty field liaison, I get to go to graduation. Mm-hmm. And but because I always had this dual role. So in other words, the students, that's how they say, and we work at the university, but that's like the home
yeah.
the university. The students that come to my intern program are mostly from San Jose State. We work with CSU, East Bay, Berkeley, and then San Francisco as well. So, like I said, I have these two roles, which I've compartmentalized for the most part. When I'm at graduation as a faculty member, I'm sitting on stage with the other faculty, and the students that we've mentored are walking across the stage getting their mm-hmm. degree is like the best thing ever. Because mm-hmm. then that's like, you see the, you know, whatever energy, I mean, they're doing the work, but right. whatever we did to support them in getting to that point, you know, they're so excited. And so that, every year, I'm like, I can't wait for graduation. and I'm so glad that I get to go with faculty, because I get to sit on the stage and I have the best seat in the whole, you know, event center.
Yeah.
So that's what impacts me the most, is seeing that the students worked so hard, made lots of sacrifices, you know, families don't get to see them as much. I mean, you know what it was like,
yeah.
you know, and they gave up, you know, lots of things. And then that day, and they're so happy and so excited that, mm-hmm. you know, to know that I played like a little bit, you know.
Because it's, you know, sometimes in case management or whatever, you never know when something impactful comes once in a while, but you get that year after year on a regular basis,
yeah.
so that is awesome. And then on the flip side of that, I think you also kind of spoke a little bit to this, but was there either in general or a specific thing that frustrated you about either child welfare work or your role in particular or just general social work?
I think that the people on the line that work with our students are called field instructors. Mm-hmm. So they're the ones that are assessing the student. They're really the mentors. Mm-hmm. And I think what frustrates me the most is that the lack of recognition that they get. Mm-hmm. It's not incentivized in any way. They're doing this because out of the goodness for their, out of the goodness of their heart and because they want to give back to the profession. But in terms of the agency side, they don't get anything.
That's so true.
And so for year after year after year of recruiting people to do this, it's hard. That's the hardest thing I did in that role was recruiting film instructors. Because I'm recruiting them and saying, it's because you're a good person. I can't give you any money. You're not going to get case over production.
They're not.
And they do it. But the frustrating thing is to see that on a meso and macro level that they're not getting the recognition that they deserve. Mm-hmm. And I understand the conversation is still happening after all these years.
I think for a lot of them, it's the love of the work, the love of the field, the potential that they can provide for these up-and-coming workers. And sometimes the social workers, because we have that in us, we don't always, kind of recognize our boundaries and although with all the good stuff that comes of it stretches them too. Mm-hmm. And so not only the lack of recognition, which is huge, but it's also like it's just more of you that you're giving out.
Right.
And we don't want to get to a point that people don't see the benefit in doing it, and then it further exacerbates, some of the challenges we may have with up-and-coming workers.
Right.
So I mentioned we live in California, in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it's pretty expensive to live here. Cost of living is pretty high. So in general, what do you think about the professional/financial opportunities that there are, not only in social work, but let's just say within MSW or really in the helping professions? Like what professionally or financially are the opportunities for young people or young people later in their career?
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, it's a profession that's undervalued mm-hmm. and underpaid. And it's unfortunate because I think the work is so important. And there are some agencies and settings that pay more, and of course social workers gravitate towards that. But honestly, I think social workers go where they can do their best work where there's some connection. And it doesn't really matter about the money. Mm-hmm. We don't get into social work because of the money. It's not there for us. And then where the money is, it's not always a good fit for mm-hmm. everybody. So I think it's something you have to balance. Many, many, many social workers that I know have side gigs, partly because they want to. Maybe it's a private practice or they're consulting or something. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's because they want to, or sometimes it's because it's needed, financially needed. Okay. And hopefully they can do that. But I think in the Bay Area, it is hard to, it's a profession that, like I said, is underpaid and undervalued. Mm-hmm. So that impacts the profession because then people are thinking, I'd probably be a really good social worker, but I won't be able to have a house, So I think we lose people there, because of that. Yeah. Is that kind of what you were thinking?
Yeah, exactly, that's so true, and which even gives more credence to the point that you made earlier about an MSW degree being, broad and having a foundation that allows you to go different directions. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you might be at a nonprofit that has a certain pay, but with an MSW, maybe it opens up some work in a hospital or even in some private businesses, mm-hmm. some industry. There are opportunities for people with our background and skills to work too. They're maybe less common, but they're there.
And so
it's key really to have that foundational mm-hmm. education and background.
And then you have somebody that can mentor you to how to market your skills.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can take all of our foundational skills and talk about them in ways that fit that particular agency, or setting, I have many people, friends, that have gone from child welfare to medical, and it's a no-brainer, but on paper, you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know.
Yeah.
But when you start talking about the type of work in child welfare, and then you put it in the language of medical social work, it's totally a good fit, So we just have to market ourselves sometimes.
Yeah, and in the last episode, which you should check out, as I mentioned, but we talked about that too, is how a lot of times for that episode was about business and starting a business, and or politically even, like, you have to kind of talk about yourself and promote yourself, and it's about me. And a lot of times in social work, we're talking about we, us, the community, and the collective. And so so that sometimes poses a little bit of challenge when you're trying to promote yourself to go this other direction maybe, but it's doable. That we have it's there. We just need someone, like you said, to mentor us how to put it together. Mm-hmm. But that's very important. So other than education, how do you think a person should prepare themselves to be well positioned to either start this career or come into this career? Are there key things?
I think sometimes there's volunteer opportunities that people can do just to kind of assess if they're good with people, because not everybody is. And social work is very relational.
And some people go 30 years and they're still working on it.
I know.
I didn't mean that, but there are others.
Yes, indeed. So I think giving yourself the opportunity to see how you interact with other people. Is it comfortable for you, or what parts of it aren't comfortable? Maybe having an opportunity to work with different age groups, because sometimes people have just a natural ability to work with teenagers. Not everybody does. It's like, oh, okay, great. Or, you like working with people that, are older, and just giving yourself opportunities to kind of check that out. And it doesn't have to be a long, forever volunteer position, but just something to give you that insight, And then, obviously the education. And the good thing about social work education is that, we're required to do internships.
Yeah.
So it gives you that opportunity to see yourself in real life situations.
Put it into practice and see what it feels like.
Yeah.
All right, so we're getting close to the end here. So during the time that you were working, and I know you're still working, but during that time and now, like, how did you take care of yourself? What were some other things in the office or outside of the office that specifically you mentioned that you had a good balance?
Yeah. I think internally it was finding, who's my circle of support? Who are the people that I can go hang out with? Who are the people I can go talk with about my new phone, or whatever? Finding my social circle within the department was huge. And also making sure who I didn't want to interact with, who were the toxic people that I just didn't really want to be part of my circle. We all get into drama, we all like to, gossip and hear things, but it's one thing to hear it, it's one thing to be in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So it's really going to be in the middle of it. But I had a lot of acquaintances, a lot of people that I interacted with, and I had a group of people that I was close with. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that I could trust. And finding that was super important in such a large organization like that. Mm-hmm. And I value those people, a lot. And then outside, it's just having all kinds of interests. And I think that's another thing about preparing for your retirement is that the only people that I know that aren't enjoying their retirement are people that didn't plan well for it. Mm-hmm. They didn't have outside interests. That work wasn't life, and then work's no longer there. Now what, right?
And a lot of those people, when they leave, they're like physical health things that happen tied to that.
Yeah. So I always had outside interests, a variety of things. A lot of things I should have probably waited until I retired, but I couldn't. And I thought, I'm just going to get everything lined up. Mm-hmm. And then when I retire, they'll already be there, and I'll just kind of jump right in and spend more time doing them, So I think that helped me a lot, is having that. Because I know that I couldn't be just sitting around trying to figure it out. I had, waiting for me, upon retirement.
Yeah, as I'm getting a little closer and seeing some of my mentors, I consider, like yourself and others, who I think I've just, by the luck of the draw, I've associated myself with people who have done a really good job of planning it and develop or creating the life that they wanted after retirement, because I see yourself and some others who are like, I'm so jealous every day on Facebook or whatever when I see everything you're all doing, and I'm stuck in the grind, still enjoying the work, but yeah. but your point is very well taken. It is developing those interests before you leave. Mm-hmm. I've seen that it seems to make things much, like you all look super happy. and the last quote, almost last question. What advice would you give yourself if you could go back to the beginning of your career? Would you do everything the same? It kind of worked out. It seems like.
I think everything worked out pretty well. I might have pursued that reclassification a little earlier. Yeah, I probably would have done that a little earlier. But in terms of the career part of it, everything was going along pretty well, pretty nicely. Mm-hmm. You know, it's what I wanted. And things progressed the way I wanted them to. But yeah, that's probably the only thing I would have done differently is pursue that. I never really looked at any other positions because I had the best position for me.
And when you talk today, you know, that didn't happen by accident for some of us and some of you that are developing. Like, you have to be intentional about how you plan your career so that 33 years later you can look back and say, I really wouldn't do too much differently, as opposed to just letting things happen and then looking back and saying, you know, I should have done X, Y, and Z.
Right.
So that's good advice. And then what's next? The look on your face kind of says it all. That smile and just.
There's a big world out there. I mean, what's next is my trip to Morocco. But I think I'm going to stay at San Jose for a while. You know, I'm on some advisory boards at some of the other universities as well. And I told them I'd stay until it doesn't make sense anymore. If I feel too far removed, you know, from what's going on in the field. But I see myself staying connected with students for a while, with interns in some capacity. And then, you know, because my life at home is robust, you know, it's like, okay, I'm drumming in a Brazilian percussion group that I love, you know, and I'm going to continue doing that. I thought I'd be practicing more. Don't tell my director, but I thought I'd be practicing more. But, you know, I have that to look forward to. You know, my husband's going to retire, in less than in about a year, year and a half. And so, you know.
That's when things really get serious.
Yeah. It was like, okay, all that stuff that we want to do more spontaneously, we'll be able to do. Mm-hmm. Granted, I have kitties that I have to take care of, but you know, my mom, but still, you know, there's just a whole bunch of life ahead, you know, and being able to have the time to enjoy it is what I'm looking forward to, whatever comes our way.
Awesome. I'm so happy for you and my other friends who have transitioned over to the next phase,
right.
And the retirement phase, not like the next phase. But I think a lot, like I mentioned, there's so much vibrance that I see from all of you that I, you know, there's those that who are just dread, like counting the days till they can leave, and that it looks very unhealthy.
Yeah.
What I see from all of you looks super healthy and something that we could all, I think, look forward to. So thank you for sharing all that wisdom with us today. Although we've known each other, I picked out a few nuggets that I'm think about going forward too. And I'll just mention to whoever is listening or watching this that the reason why some of you may have come here is because of a thing called the Social Work Mentor. And so the Social Work Mentor, it's a resource that over the past few years, as we talk about your interests outside of work, it's one of my interests I've developed in my spare time. Just, you know, there's a web app and an Android app, and I'm starting on some courses and some different things that through Social Work Mentor, with the idea of, number one, part of that is this podcast and really just exposing people that may be interested in the field to what we do. So that's kind of core to what Social Work Mentor is just exposing people to the awesomeness that is social work, and also supporting those who are in it. Those, we talked about that 1-3 year early on career stuff. And so if you're in it, you know, if there are tools or something that can be provided through Social Work Mentor, hopefully that gets some of our colleagues to continue going. So if you go to socialworkmentor.com or socialworkmentor.com/links, you can find out more about just what the Social Work Mentor is, and you can always contact me social media or email or whatever. So thank you again, Barbara, for agreeing to do this. And I think I had fun and I learned some stuff. And hopefully some people that watch this will gain some stuff and apply it really to their careers and make social work that much more satisfying for themselves. So thanks again for joining us. Make sure that you follow or subscribe or whatever your platform calls for, because this one was a good one and the next one's gonna be too, and you don't wanna miss it. So thanks for staying here, paying attention, and I'll see you next time.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Ms. Barbara Watkins and got some useful information out of it that you can use and apply for yourself or maybe your own organization. Before you leave, I'll remind you to check out Social Work Mentor. And specifically, I'll ask you if you are interested to check out the courses section. A couple of our courses have recently reached the bestseller status and 4.5 and 5-star ratings. And so obviously there's a lot of people out there who are finding those courses useful, and I'd encourage you to check them out. Again, socialworkmentor.com/links is where you'll find links to all of our information. So thanks for listening to this podcast, and keep an eye out or keep an ear out for the next one coming your way soon. See you later.